Boom, hello, and welcome to Trailer Made.
It's really nice to hear you say that. I think the whole world has been waiting to hear those words for quite some time. It's been a while.
It's been a while. The ground trembled when they heard boom.
Mm-hmm. You always get to say it.
Oh.
Can we try something?
Yeah.
If you don't like it, you can throw it right back at me.
It's not up to me. It's America. But you go ahead.
If listeners hate it, they can send in their hate mail.
Okay.
Just let's try it real quick.
Ready.
Boom, hello.
Felt weird.
It did? It's not the same, is it?
It's not that it wasn't the same. It's just funny to make you feel weird about it. I thought you did a great job there.
Can we just act like I'm you real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
Boom, hello, and welcome to Trailer Made.
Wait, can I act like you?
Yeah, sure.
Here's an interesting fact that no one cares about.
God.
That was me.
You're coming out swinging right away.
Wait, all right. You did sound good with Boom, hello.
Oh, thank you. I don't mean to steal your thunder.
No, you didn't.
It is actually something I'm jealous about. Like, I wish I could say boom, hello sometimes.
I mean, you did a great job.
Thanks.
What do you say that I should steal?
I don't think I have any really good catchphrases.
You say indeed. Maybe I'll start saying that.
That's just a bad habit. When I'm trying to search for words, I'll say indeed. You know what you could try saying are interesting ideas. You could try saying interesting things of substance. I don't mean that. You took a shot at me. I was just taking a shot at you. Yeah, now we're even.
It was well played. It was well played, and it was warranted. Yeah. And on that note, cue theme song.
In a world where movie trailers have reached new heights, two semi-competent males will talk about them using microphones. AJ Gutierrez and Jim Schwartz in Trailer Made.
It is good to be back. Sorry we've been off the air for so long. A lot of trailers have dropped. We're going to spend this episode catching up on some. So you and I'm just going to tell listeners what we've decided to do. You and I are each going to pick two trailers that we feel like are memorable and worth discussing of all the trailers that have premiered since we last recorded.
Because there's been a lot.
There have been a lot. A lot of big ones, too. A lot of awards contenders, a lot of blockbusters. So we're going to bring up two trailers each. It could be a trailer that you love. It could be a trailer you hate. It's just a trailer that we think is worth discussing. I'm going to start us off.
Cool.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. I think this is a good
idea. You understand the premise.
I understand the premise. I think it's a good idea because we don't have time to go through everything we missed. So it's basically, we're bringing it back to basics. Let's just talk about stuff we want to talk about. I'm ready. Wait. Okay, now I'm ready.
Here we go. First trailer I'm going to bring up. Uncut Gems.
Bam, 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 bam.
That is not a sound effect used in that trailer. I don't know where that came from. That was just regurgitation.
It was a good lead up to Uncut Gems. It just felt like it needed something. So yeah. You know me.
Do you agree that this is a trailer we should be discussing? Or were you kind of just like left...
No, I think it's a I think it's a great trailer to discuss, which is also cool because it's not like a huge blockbuster, but it's also a trailer that caused a lot of attention right away.
For sure.
From two filmmakers that aren't that well known and yet.
Not yet, but they're rising. They are rising now.
We're talking about the Safdie brothers.
Yes.
And their film before this was called Good Time.
Which was probably their breakout movie for a wider audience, you know?
It still wasn't a huge release,
but, you know, there was talk when that movie came out about Robert Pattinson maybe being up for an Oscar for his performance in it. It was very good. They're following it up with another movie featuring a major star, and I'm talking about Adam Sandler, of course.
Hubbity-doo.
That's pretty good.
I had to do it now.
That input was warranted.
Thank you. Hubbity-doo. All right, I'm done.
Yeah, you've worn it out. You know, I don't think this movie is going to be a big awards contender. It's probably going to be too disturbing, too manic, too dark.
I don't know, man.
We'll see. We'll see.
An Adam Sandler performance like people are just waiting for
it. I have heard about it. It has premiered at some festivals, and I think older audiences definitely aren't compelled by it as much as people that are our age. I think our demographic starting to really love the Safdie brothers.
Well, they're also like New York filmmakers. Mm-hmm. You know, Good Time was very New York.
They're this gritty.
Is very New York.
They're very good
very
at
very gritty and grainy, and you know, there's a lot of neon happening. Yeah. Cool soundtrack, handheld. It's dope.
I should say that Adam Sandler is potentially an awards contender. This could be a performance that gets him, you know, recognized by the Academy.
I agree.
I made a crazy risk, a gamble, and it's about to pay off. So I want the Celtics to cover. I want the Celtics halftime. I want Garnett points and rebounds. What do you know?
I don't know. I just know.
Well, I'll tell you what I know. That's the dumbest fucking bet I ever heard of.
I disagree. I disagree, Gary.
Everybody loves a strong performance from someone who is, you know, famous, but maybe not respected in that regard. Everybody loves a story like that. And Adam Sandler's done that a few times in his career. But this performance might be the one that gets him recognized. We were talking about Safdie brothers, though. Let's bring it back to them. They are rising in terms of just like filmmakers to look out for. And when watching this trailer, I was struck by just their style and how it is very distinct. And it kind of feels like they're building a brand off their style. I was curious, what do you think defines their brand if they do have a brand? That might be offensive to some people to call it a brand, but what is their style?
I see what you're saying with their brand because, you know, everyone has a brand now, Jim.
Yeah, that was a very like millennial thing for me to say. What are the Safdie brothers brand?
Yeah, but it's kind of a real thing. Yeah. I would say more along the lines of auteurism, if you will.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't even think they're going for it. It's just, you know, any person who makes a thing, regardless, for the most part, I mean, there's obviously people who completely just rip off something else. But if you generally have a vision for something and you're trying to make it, no matter what, your own taste and style is just going to naturally come through without mm-hmm. you really having to try that hard, I would say. Like, if you made a film or if I made a film, they would look different just based off our, even though we have a lot of similar tastes, you know, they would have their own unique styles, their own unique choices. And I think theirs are just so extreme that they're kind of, you know, making people turn heads and they're doing things a little bit different.
Yours would have more fart noises.
A lot of fart noises. Yeah. Mine would just be filled with whoopee cushions and a lot of chickens just running around.
Yeah,
no one knows
chickens.
Why. Love chickens and scenes. But that's me. That's
definitely
my,
your brand.
That's my brand. I'm an auteur. I got chickens and farts. Also a great fast food restaurant. chickens and farts. But back to them and their style, I think they use a lot of neon, which is cool. Good Time in this, there's a lot of neon scenes.
Black lights. Mm-hmm.
Their soundtracks are very like cool street techno.
You're taking my money all over town, placing bets.
I'm having very serious second thoughts.
Are you serious right now?
I know I fucked up.
Howard, where's the money right now?
Howard, got my money?
Howard!
Is it too late? I'm done. That means nothing. It meant nothing. Please. Give me another shot.
They also use a lot of voyeuristic perspectives. Like this has a shot in the jewelry store, mm-hmm. I guess. He's a jeweler, so whatever that is. But it's shot like it's a CCTV camera.
Yeah.
Like it's up in the corner and you see them coming through. And like they have a lot of that, like there's a scene where he gets punched.
Yeah.
And it's shot from far away.
The soundtrack goes quiet.
But it looks like you're watching it from across the street. Yeah. And like in New York, when you see things like that, a lot of times you see crazy stuff happen, but you see it like from across the street.
Yeah.
You see it from those perspectives. I don't know. I think it's just a mix of style, handheld.
Yeah, it's a little, I mean, all the things you were describing is like a little documentary-like.
Totally.
You know, like the idea of him getting punched on the street in the middle of broad daylight and the way it's filmed like the camera is across the street and someone just happened to capture it.
Exactly.
That is a very documentary aesthetic.
Even the lighting, like nothing really seems well lit. Everything's just kind of like
very
dark and uneven,
yeah.
Which makes it seem like they don't have a lot of like big lighting setups.
I mean, it works for their subject matter too, what you're saying about it kind of feeling voyeuristic, because, you know, a lot of their movies do take place at night in a certain subculture. you know, their movies are very much kind of like burrowing into the, you know, the seedy underbelly of the city.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's Good Time is mostly all at night.
Good Time is all at night, actually.
I think just in the morning when that dude falls off the building is the only daytime.
Yeah.
But I think your point about the underbelly of society is dead on, of like people you don't really think about too much, or like it's kind of like one of those things where you walk down the street and everyone has a story. Mm-hmm. You see some like crazy person, or you see a rich person, or whatever, but you're always interacting with a lot of people, and you think about like what's their story, what's their day like. And this is going into one of those of like, you know, the Diamond District.
Yeah.
The Diamond District is like an interesting part of New York that you don't ever really see. And to have the whole thing revolve around that is pretty dope.
And the Diamond District, you know, the people who make a living in the Diamond District, I'm sure there are some shady figures who
are... Yeah, there's like cash being handed around and like envelopes. Like, have you ever been to the Diamond District?
Yeah, but I kind of moved through it quickly. I've never... you know, even flirted with doing business there. I like when I bought my engagement ring, I did not go to the Diamond District. I was too intimidated by that.
Yeah, well, because there's, I went to see a lawyer in the Diamond District about a housing thing that we had to go through. Yeah. Long story short, but there's a lot of just like secret doors and knocks and like things you have to get through to go into those rooms. It's intimidating.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a subculture. That's for sure. I also think something that is a defining aspect of their style is just the energy. It's very high. Very high energy.
You like to win, right? This is no different than that.
Black Jewel power, nigga.
This is my fucking way.
You think I'm stupid, Howard? You and your whole fucking family. I heard you resurface your fucking swimming pool. You know how that makes me feel.
Never resurface anything. You think your life is more important than my life? I don't know who said that.
I told you about how things were gonna go. You like the way things are going now?
That's my family.
Get the kids out of the house.
Their movies are like manic.
That's a really good point.
To a certain degree. There's always...
Stakes are high.
Stakes are always high. It's always someone sort of on the edge of sanity, of, you know, and there are usually multiple conversations going on at once. You know, that's like a very, you know, Safdie Brothers thing to have. You're listening to these guys talk, but you can still hear these other people talking in the background. And then you pan, you start listening to what these guys are talking about. That was something very present in Good Time. And it's even present in this trailer. Like the trailer, the first time I watched it, I was like, whoa, what's happening in this trailer? It's just like, it's a lot to take in. It's just all these things rushing at you. I've only really gotten to understand what the plot is about after watching the trailer a few times, where I can start like digesting that it's throwing at
you. Even if you don't really know what the plot is, you're still like, I'm in.
The style is still very compelling. I mean, it's that grittiness that I think we respond to. I'm always entertained by movies that can capture reality in a very authentic way. And these guys, I wouldn't know, because as we were saying, we don't have much experience in the Diamond District, but it feels real.
Yeah,
it totally. Feels very real.
Totally. And I was watching an interview with them where they talk about how they love, this is another documentary vibe, using people that have never acted before.
Yep.
In there. And so, best example, Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
It's very cool to see Kevin Garnett act as Kevin Garnett.
It's crazy. And from the short snippets of scenes, it looks like he gives a damn good performance.
Yeah, it looks like he does a good job.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't look like he's
uncomfortable
acting necessarily. Yeah, he looks very, like, comfortable in the scene.
Yeah.
I don't know what their trick is in doing that. You know, since Good Time, I've gone back and watched one of their earlier movies, which was a movie called Heaven Knows What. Definitely not for everybody. that movie is about drug addicts who live on the street.
There and you go. Again,
it's definitely a subculture, and it's largely made up of non-actors. There's only one actor, like one professional actor, in the movie, and the main character is not an actor. How the movie came to be actually was they were walking down the street, they ran into this girl that was on the street, and they got to talking, and she asked what they did. They said that they were filmmakers. She said, like, hey, you should make a movie about my life. And they said to her, write a script and give it to us, and we'll see. We'll take it from there. She wrote a script by going into an Apple store off and on using their computers there, writing a script, emailing it to herself, and eventually got it to a place where she could present it to them. And there was something there, and they were like, all right, this is something that we can make. And they polished it up, and they made a movie starring her. They were like, we'll make this movie if you promise to go sober. And yeah, it's a...
What an amazing story.
It's a crazy movie, very dark, very disturbing, but it's like, it feels very real. You know, I think most people do not want to spend 2 hours knowing what it's like to be a homeless drug addict in New York, but I believe that that is what it is like, what that movie presents.
I would assume so.
You know,
how is she in it?
She's great. She's amazing in it.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's honestly hard to tell who the actor is and who the, you know, non-actors are. So yeah,
the Safdie brothers,
they're interesting dudes. Yeah,
they're building a brand.
They're building a brand, as they would say. And also, I just want to say it's an A24 movie. So
shouts.
We gotta talk about at least one A24 trailer on this podcast.
We are just stereotypes of ourselves.
Indeed. There we go again.
I said indeed.
I caught myself. Will you please slap me every time I say indeed on this podcast?
You got it, Jim.
All right.
So, Jim, I want to match your cool, hip A24 trailer.
Oh, yeah. You got a hip title
with
to
something hip,
drop?
Underground, not a lot of people know about. I'm talking about a little thing called Star Wars.
What?
Don't know if you heard of it. Here's the thing.
I mean, we have to talk about Star Wars. The final trailers.
If you're annoyed by this, then you... Wait, if you're listening to this podcast, you're not annoyed by this.
Yeah, I know. If you listen to this podcast, chances are you like hearing us talk about Star Wars because we do it a lot.
Cool. So just deal with it. We're going to talk about it. We have to. Also, because it's going to be the last, this is the last trailer.
I'm also, let me just say, I'm impressed that we didn't open up the episode talking about Star
Wars. Yeah, because we've grown.
Yeah, we've grown.
Yeah, but it's here.
Yeah. Let's talk about Star Wars.
Let's talk about Star Wars. I'm excited. This is going to be the last trailer we talk about in the
Skywalker saga.
The Skywalker saga.
This is it.
It's an instinct. Feeling. The Force brought us together. We're not alone. Good people will fight if we lead them.
People keep telling me they know me. No one does.
But I do.
It's all coming down to this.
It's over now. And with that being said, kind of okay with it. You feel me?
I do.
It's almost like they've definitely... We'll get into the trailer, listeners. We'll feed you baby birds. But there's a lot of talk about oversaturation.
Yeah.
And about how, you know, Disney gets Star Wars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's excited. And hadn't then, seen anything since the George Lucas prequels, mm-hmm. Revenge of the Sith. Disney buys Lucasfilm. We're going to continue the Skywalker saga with Force Awakens, J.J. Abrams, bringing back Harrison Ford, doing all the things.
An incredibly exciting year.
So exciting.
Leading up to that.
I had never been so excited to see a movie in a lot. I think it was probably before that, The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
You're probably the same.
Yeah, for sure. I was very excited for The Dark Knight.
But this was like, you go into the theater and this was an event. Like, I bought an
outfit.
There was
so much anticipation for it.
My brother and I got sweatshirts matching. I think Kat also wore a Star Wars thing, and mm-hmm. she was like just along for the ride. It was an event.
Yeah.
And it was so fun, and like everything they did was like, wow, this is feeling great.
I totally get what you're saying. It was an unprecedented level of anticipation for that first movie back.
Exactly.
It more so than the prequels, because it was returning characters. We were going to see Han Solo. We were going to see Luke Skywalker. Little did we know that Luke Skywalker would only appear in one scene in The Force Awakens, but
fine.
It was Yeah, I actually wasn't mad about
the idea of him was there.
The idea of him, yeah.
It was just cool. Like we knew there were going to be three more movies, mm-hmm. but no one had any idea what the story was going to be. And then there was going to be three different directors for each one. One, like, up and coming, like Ryan Johnson, who's not up and coming, but, like, he did cool ass, you know, more movie, yeah. underground movies. Yeah. And I was like, wow, they're taking chances.
R-rated movies, too.
Yeah,
I was
like, this is going to be so...
Looper was, you know, it was, like,
Looper
pretty
was
violent and had some disturbing scenes in it.
Looper.
So it's always exciting when you see someone that's coming from, like, a background where they've done more, you know, adult movies,
yeah.
more R, you know, R-rated gritty things.
Yeah.
And when they're going to enter into, the blockbuster family-friendly space, you're like, oh, I wonder what kind of edge they're going to bring to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the trailers were great.
Yep.
And then slowly over time, we just got so much, and the, you know, Rogue One and yeah. Solo, and then, you know, all of the theme parks and the offshoots and the store, and it just got like to the point where it was a lot. And then it's sad to say, like, these are coming out now, and I'm excited to see it. But I'm like not insanely excited to see it.
You're speaking, I think, on behalf of the general population.
Yes.
Because
the GP
box office tracking has come out for the movie, and
yep.
they're saying it's going. It's so far has the lowest tracking of all these new Star Wars sequels.
Yes.
We're losing excitement for this franchise.
Because we're getting shit every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, the way they manipulate the trailers is they try to, you know, like the trailer before this, which we had an episode on, mm-hmm. it was very much nostalgia-driven, where it was...
There you go again with that soft G, nostalgia.
Did I do it again?
You did. You actually said it, I think, correctly the first time, and then you
corrected myself to the wrong way.
Yeah,
I got a...
It's okay.
I also forgot I said that.
You say tomato, I said tomato, you know?
Yeah, but like nostalgia is not a real word, apparently. My father-in-law listens to this podcast, and he was the first to really let me know.
Yeah.
He was just like, oh, man, I'm so nostalgic that you come into the house. I was like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, right. I'm an idiot.
Hey, it's okay. I say words incorrectly all the time.
Shut up. No, you don't. Anyway, you know what I'm saying. I'm not going to say that word again. That being said... They try to use that, like, thinking of, you know, pulling at the heartstrings with the last one. And this one, I feel like they're still trying to do that, but it doesn't really work anymore.
I share your general sentiment in that I think this trailer, this final one, is good, if not great.
Long have I waited. And now, you're coming together.
No,
it's really it's well done.
I needed
to
say
it
that.
It feels
though.
Neat, but I'm totally with you. I'm not that excited for this movie. Something is keeping me from being really excited, and that is I'm glad you bring it up because that was my main point to bring up with you, which is like, why are we not as excited? You know, you're pointing to saturation, and I think that is very valid. I actually have a more pointed thing, and I hate to be the guy that like throws hate on a movie.
Throw it.
Because I think Rian Johnson just seems like a cool dude. I think he took the backlash to The Last Jedi really well, but I put a lot of the blame on The Last Jedi. I think in the realm of this 9-movie story, it didn't feel like the
epic.
Penultimate one. It didn't feel like the one that was setting you up for the very last one.
Yeah.
It actually felt like it was starting fresh. It was all about throwing away the past and starting anew. I think that was my main gripe with The Last Jedi, was that it felt like it was setting up the franchise to make countless more movies with these characters, and not to have it feel like it was setting up the concluding chapter of the story. And then you get J.J. Abrams jumping back on for episode 9 here, and all this stuff with the Emperor, as excited as I am to see him reappear in the story, there's no question that there's a lot of course correction going on here. And like, yeah, he's given interviews saying, I don't know any story that doesn't, you know, have callbacks to the beginning of the story. And
fine.
That's valid. I totally get it. The problem that a lot of people have is that there's been no hint within the last two movies that the Emperor is still alive and that he's
reaching for something. He's reaching.
Is coming out of left field.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a little bit placed on J.J. Abrams, like for forcing that in to this movie. But I also do wish Rian Johnson hadn't shit on the past movies as much as he did. That's a strong word. I don't think he hates the past movies. But I think I kind of liked what he was trying to do. I just don't think he did it well. And I also don't think you can throw away the whole history of these characters in this world. You're nearing the end of it.
He almost lowered the stakes. In a way, you should be
embracing it.
He almost lowered the stakes in a weird way.
Yeah.
Where I was just kind of like, I don't really care as much as I thought I did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But as a trailer, it's cool. And like J.J. Abrams is great about like, let's see what it looks like in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And they fight on the Death Star. Like J.J. Abrams is almost making these films and trailers as if he's playing with action figures.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've made this point before.
Yeah, he's like a kid playing with toys. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, okay, where would it be cool to see them fight? Like, oh, what if it's on the ruins of the Death Star and it's in the ocean and there's waves crashing? And then like, okay, cool. And then what if there's an ice planet that looks like it's a reflection of ice?
That shot is amazing.
It's amazing. And we're going to a shot of like every single Star Destroyer and like ship in the Star Wars universe in one frame. Like, I get it. And it's cool. And I'm going to see it in theaters for that reason. But it's like, part of me feels like they're just reaching for whatever they can right now to just really remind you how epic this is and how they're making it new.
Confronting fear is the destiny of a Jedi. Your destiny will be with you
always.
I think also the marketing for these movies has grown a little tired. The fact that they give you so little in terms of plot, and it's very much meant to tease out certain elements of the plot, I'm kind of just tired of it, you know. And that is what generates so much conversation around these trailers, is like what you can glean from the story, from what it does provide, from the little breadcrumb it does give you. And I'm kind of just like, okay, I mean, we can talk about that. We can talk about what the Emperor means about them coming together and that being meaning the end for them.
Yeah,
we should probably talk about that. But at the same time, I'm kind of just like, I know that's what you want me to talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you want us to be like dissecting.
Yeah, I'm not going to take your bait. Like,
I don't want to.
The shot of them two together, like, slashing whatever and it breaks.
It looks like they're destroying Kylo Ren's costume.
It's like, and we're never gonna guess, like, are they or aren't they?
Yeah.
I'm almost like, I just want to know what happens so I can move on. Cool. I know those aren't words I'm saying, but
but do you think it's all just to get us talking and that in the end Kylo Ren is gonna be the villain, Rey is gonna be the hero?
I don't know. I'm honestly exhausted.
I'm trying. Do you think when the Emperor says,
"You're coming together," is your undoing?
But it's exactly what you said. They're like trying to tease us.
What do you think it means?
I honestly feel like the Kylo Ren Rey thing is just too obvious now. Where it's gonna be like, all right, you guys are cool. You're friends. There's a bigger thing. I have a feeling they squashed the Kylo Ren Rey thing early, and then the rest of the movie's about a bigger thing. I would hope. But what do I know? I'm just a podcast host.
I think everybody can sense your tiredness with Star Wars. Do you have anything else that you want
to
add?
I love Star Wars. I'm excited to go to Star Wars Land at Disney. That's going to be great.
Yeah. You excited about The Mandalorian?
Yeah, I'm excited about The Mandalorian. It's something new.
Yeah.
I think it's just this trilogy has been kind of all over the place for me. So I'm just ready for this part.
Once again, Rian Johnson, I really respect you.
I'm with you.
I think you're a cool guy.
I was excited after Force Awakens, but
Yeah, I've lost steam with this.
Didn't like Solo. No, Rogue One I actually thought was better than Solo, but I still wasn't like blown away by it.
I agree with that.
I think Mandalorian's gonna be cool, and I think they just kind of need to like start anew. Take a break for a little while, dust yourself off, make the money from the theme park. Let's move on. Hey, Jim, you're up. It's kind of like, it's an interesting way to do the podcast. It's like, all right, I'll see your uncut gems and raise you a Star Wars.
Yeah, it is like a, it's like a poker game.
Yeah.
You want to see what card I have up?
I do.
I'm going to talk about a little movie.
Here we go.
Slash man. Called Richard Jewell.
Bum, bum, bum.
You know who requested this trailer?
I think it was my mom.
It was your mom. She said, hey guys, not sure if you saw this. We're like, definitely
saw
it, Pearl.
Mom, come on.
but
love you, mom.
I agreed with her. I was like, Pearl.
She was right.
Yeah, this is definitely a trailer we got to discuss.
It's like a really well-made trailer.
Yes. Let's talk about that first.
Richard, you're a national hero now.
Thank you, sir. But I was just doing my job.
Move away from the town!
You always look at the guy who found the bomb just like you always look at the guy who found the body.
Jewel fits the profile of the lone bomber, a frustrated white man who is a police wannabe who seeks to become a hero.
We're running it.
You're a suspect.
You don't talk.
I talk. Say it.
I don't talk.
This might be the only way to clear your name. I want you to say there's a bomb in Centennial Park. You have 30 minutes.
I think, for one, I really like trailers that use one music track and just build off that throughout. It actually, the music sounds like a Trent Reznor score.
Yeah, it does.
So it sounds a little bit like The Social Network or something. I also really like the casting. I'm glad to see Sam Rockwell not playing a bigoted character. You know, we've seen him play a dumb Nazi in Jojo Rabbit. He's been a dumb racist cop in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I'm glad to see him playing like a nice, decent guy, or at least what appears to be. The guy who plays Richard Jewell, his name is Paul Walter Hauser. He's been giving some great performances recently. Also playing dumb people. He was in I, Tonya. He was the guy...
Oh, he was
like
the
arranged
hitman.
For, yes. He was like the dumb idiot friend that, you know, makes a mess of everything. He was also in Black Klansman. He was one of the,
yes.
the KKK guys. He's been really good at playing like dumb slash dangerous guys who are kind of comically dumb. And I think it was really brilliant casting to make him Richard Jewell. One, he does kind of look like Richard Jewell.
But can you give a quick, like for people who haven't seen the trailer yet or want some context, give some context to the Richard Jewell story?
Richard Jewell was the man who discovered the bomb at the 1996 Atlanta Olympics, and he was then suspected to be the guy who planted the bomb. And he ended up being found not guilty, but he recently died. And people have always said what a raw deal he got. And so this movie is telling his story. Specifically around the events of that 1996 Atlanta bombing and the fallout that happened afterwards.
Clint Eastwood directing,
mm-hmm.
which is a thing because he's really old.
He's 88, 89. It's pretty fascinating. This is what I wanted to bring up actually about this was it's kind of a classic Clint move to drop a trailer for a movie that no one's been talking about in a year when there are a lot of buzzy titles. You know, we've been talking about The Irishman. We have Star Wars. Joker's been stealing a lot of, you know, attention and controversy.
Parasite
is, you know, this foreign movie that everyone is saying you have to see.
Which we both saw, and it's good.
It's excellent. If you haven't seen Parasite, go to a theater where...
Go to a theater where movies are played, and please watch it.
it's kind of a classic Clint move to just... out of nowhere, drop a movie, and the movie itself is going to premiere at the tail end of the award season. And as of now, you should count it among, you know, the award contenders. Clint Eastwood movies do usually get attention, and he gets a lot of attention from the Academy. He has a lot of respect. Million Dollar Baby was kind of released the same way. It came out like right around Christmas time and just stole all the attention from all the other movies and ended up winning Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor. So who knows if this will be as successful as that movie. Like you said, Clint Eastwood's 88 years old. Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of amazing. He's got a great cast.
John Hamm, Olivia
Interesting
Wilde.
Interesting story. Someone pointed out that the movie began filming in June of this year.
Okay, that makes sense. Because anything you hear about Clint Eastwood directing, he does like three takes and they move on.
Three takes might even be a stretch.
He's like, okay, we're good.
Some people say he does one take.
Yeah.
That
He rolls on rehearsals. And sometimes he'll use the rehearsal.
What I've read is that you're basically expected to just be on your toes and ready to deliver. And that pressure of knowing that Clint wants to just do one take kind of gets people operating at the height of their game and just ready, just because they know they might not be given another shot. Supposedly, Clint will only do another take if there's a real problem with it.
He's tired.
Yeah, he's like, hey,
he's got
man.
Things. He's like, yo, I got to take a nap.
I got to have dinner at 6, yo, be in bed by 7.
Got to watch the news. I need to eat my prunes.
But no, it's fascinating. You know, we're usually talking about directors who are control freaks, people who are, you know, asking for a lot of takes, who are very demanding, very, you know, anal and, picky about what they want. And Clint kind of seems to operate on a different wavelength. He seems to be less fussy.
It's because he's on his way out.
But he's always been like that, man. He's always been like that.
Like even early stuff?
Yeah, yeah. He's
Maybe
always been
he's just,
described as that.
He's seen so much and knows so much. He's confident.
Well, it's sort of an old... I've read old directors doing this before, where if you do one take, it is a way to protect your movie from the studio interfering.
Because it's like, it's the only take we got.
If that's the only take you got and you like it,
wow,
let's just go.
I might
that
use
way,
that.
That way the studio can't like be like, hey, can you use another take? They're like, sorry, I don't have one.
I might use that for my job.
Yeah.
It's a really good idea.
Now, in his old age, I feel like Clint has gotten more politically involved. And so, you know, it's notable just because he's one of the few people in Hollywood who is a Republican and, you know, will be combative with liberals on certain points. And I think largely his movies stay away from politics, but there is an element to this movie that is very like critical of the media and portraying, you know, these journalists as parasites, villains, people who, you know, are
I didn't even think of it that way.
Possibly despicable. I did think about that. I was like, I wonder if this is coming from a slightly political place. My least favorite part of the trailer is the shot of the news editor being like, we're gonna run it.
Was that Olivia Wilde?
It was so Olivia Wilde is, I think,
the journalist
reporting back to her editor saying like, this is the story. And the editor, just the way the actor delivers the line is,
we're running it,
is so villainous. It's like, I don't think any like newspaper editor is like, yes, run it, you know,
make it quick. Yeah.
In that particular case, I think Clint maybe should have done one other take, slightly less antagonizing.
But can we talk about the structure of the trailer?
Yeah.
I think that as a device to use, they set up at the very beginning.
An
interrogation, and we need you to say this.
Let's get a new tape going. All right, Richard, here's what we're going to do.
We need a voice exemplar.
I want you to say into this phone, there's a bomb in Centennial Park. You have 30 minutes.
So then you start getting the context of the trailer, and it keeps going. Sam Rockwell's like, don't say it. You don't have to say anything. And you have like a mini narrative within the trailer, which I think is cool.
It's very coherent. It's a yeah. very coherent trailer.
But like that one narrative of like, you started off with, we need you to say this, and you don't know what he's going to say. Then you get some context of the backstory. And then it grows back to that moment where Sam Rockwell mm-hmm. says, don't talk to them. Don't do what they say.
Stop trying to be their best friend.
I was raised to respect authority.
Authority's looking to eat you alive.
There's a bomb in Centennial Park. We have 30 minutes.
I'm sorry, what?
His accusers are two of the most powerful forces in the world, the United States government and the media.
I do want to help y'all. I'm law enforcement, too. There is a bomb in Centennial Park. You have 30 minutes.
You learn that he is a man of justice, and you know, he's a little simple, mm-hmm. but the one thing that he really cares about is the law, mm-hmm. which, because he's like a security guard and he wanted to be a cop, so that he respects.
You really feel for him when he's saying, like, I've been raised to respect authority, and
yeah, it has like a three-act structure, and then you get to the end and he ends up giving in and he says, like, there is a bomb in Centennial Park, but then he keeps repeating it, and just makes it a little more and more tense with the music, and it's just a great build for the whole thing.
Yeah,
it's a really awesome, structurally built trailer.
Did he do it?
Richard Jewell is an innocent man. He's a hero.
There is a bomb in Centennial Park. You have 30 minutes.
One more time, just a little louder.
I report the facts.
You've ruined this man's life.
There is a bomb in Centennial Park. You have 30 minutes.
Do a couple in a row.
My son saved people's lives.
There is a bomb in Centennial Park. You have 30 minutes.
You set that bomb.
There is a bomb in Centennial Park. You have 30 minutes.
I don't know how to protect you.
I think your client is guilty as hell.
They want to fry you.
You ready to start fighting back?
When I was talking about the trailer being very coherent, you know, I think some of that has to do with it just using one track, one music track, and letting that just build. But also, I think very much using that interrogation scene as sort of the spine of the trailer, and letting that scene kind of evolve and keep coming back to it. It really does add to that tension.
Totally.
And you can kind of follow along the whole movie. You know, we were talking about like Uncut Gems. That's a trailer that's very manic, all over the place. I like the style, but I also, this is a totally different kind of trailer where
it tells a story.
It tells the story, you know.
Star Wars, no idea. Set piece, visuals you want to see, lines you don't know how they matter, but they're meant to like tug at your heartstrings.
Star Wars is at least neat in its teasing, you know? It is.
It's a game.
Very
Star Wars
deliberate
is a, it's
about
a game.
How little it's giving you. But yeah.
Because a lot of people don't know anything about this story. I didn't know much about it either. So they really need to kind of give you that perspective in this trailer. I thought they did a good job.
You know, you even get a little emotional by the end of the trailer when Sam Rockwell.
I wept.
No, you didn't.
You're right.
Shed a tear for me right now and I'll bleed you.
Okay, hold up.
When Sam Rockwell says, "Are you ready to fight?" and Richard Jewell looks at him and just like.
Yeah. He's
so nervous.
I want to
like
give him a hug.
And he like, nods. Yeah, you want to hug the guy.
I know.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for him.
It's a
I
great
mean, too, I mean, he obviously did it.
We can all agree on that. I'm really looking forward to this movie. I think it's worth bringing this trailer up because you can't count Clint out. Jewels and Gems. Should we make that the name of the episode?
Jewels and Gems, Jim, or just Jewels and Gems? Hey, Jim, Jewels and Gems.
Let's just call it Jewels and Gems. The gym is confusing.
You got it, Jim.
All right, AJ. That leaves us with just one more pick from you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Antlers.
It sounds dumb when you say it like that.
It's a title that you could really make scary if you say it the right way. Like, it's called Antlers. You're like, oh. Or Antlers.
Gonna see Antlers.
Like, okay, what the hell is that?
What if you whisper it?
Antlers. I think you gotta be like, Antlers.
Yeah, Antlers. Yeah,
yo, did you see Antlers? Show us your antlers. Which legitimately, that was the thing after I saw the trailer. All I wanted to do was go, show us your antlers. Where are the antlers?
Where are the antlers at? Movie was fine. Not a lot of antlers in it,
though. Not a lot of antlers in the movie. No, Antlers is a... I don't know much about it. It's based off a short story that you read.
I did read the short story. So the first trailer dropped a couple months ago, and it was also terrifying. And I saw that it was based off a short story, and the short story is available online. So I gave it a read, and it's
scary.
It's very scary, actually. Well, and it makes the trailers pretty interesting now too, because I can kind of piece together in my head what scenes it's showing and in what order of the story that's going
to
be.
So I'll give some context to the trailer, mm-hmm. and I haven't read the story, so I don't know what's happening. But basically, long story short, it's the old our son's feeding something in the shed story.
We've all seen this story.
We've all been there. Where
that's what I was going
to
say.
Our 10-year-old son's bringing dead animals to the shed. No one knows what happens.
Movie trailers for horror, trailers for horror movies are so often predictable. There's so many, well-trodden subgenres of horror. Like this is the haunted house. This is the demon story. This one feels pretty fresh.
Yeah.
It's disturbing, but like originally disturbing.
And it's simple. It's literally a kid has like this secret room or shed in his house.
He's killing animals outside.
Right. He's killing animals and he's like bringing them to this shed to like feed a monster.
Killing rabbits, feeding God knows what.
And it builds on that. Also, it's about a monster. And then by the end of this new trailer, you kind of see the monster and it's like a weird semi-human demon thing. And at the end, it keeps growing and it has like weird antlers, I think. Mm-hmm. But that's where I was like, show us your antlers. One interesting fact about it, Guillermo del Toro is a producer.
Mm-hmm.
He loves monsters. Mm-hmm. Like monsters is his thing, where he loves horror, obviously, and he makes,
he makes specifically monsters. He loves monster movies,
and he loves the idea of monsters. He has an entire Shape of Water is a monster. Pan's Labyrinth had monsters. Yeah. Like he just has an affection for. I've listened to a lot of interviews with him talking about monsters. He has a museum in his house dedicated to monsters and horror, but specifically monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And he has like when he made Shape of Water, he talked about that. And he has like a weird, like, affection to monsters. But this is very much a monster movie.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It's just like, it's a movie about a monster.
And it's sufficiently, mysterious. This monster's in this kid's house, but what relation does the kid have with the monster? Why is the kid having to feed this monster?
Yeah. You don't just like meet a monster at school. Hey, you want to spend the night?
Mom, Dad, I brought this monster home.
Like,
with
all right, does he
put
have
him in the attic?
Does he have antlers? Yes, all right. But it's a simple trailer. The sound design's cool.
I mean, that's, I think, a trademark of all good horror trailers. They have to have great sound design, though,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, true.
The sound design is really important to horror movies and to their trailers as well. The sound is usually what freaks you out the most. The movie's starring Carrie Russell.
Yes.
Jesse Plemons. Do you want to know a little bit about the story that this is based off, or do you want to go in fresh?
Can you just give, Jim?
Yeah.
You need to give a trailer version audio of what you read.
Wow.
Does that make sense? Because I don't want you to tell me what happens, but like, give me some kibbles and bits. Can you also do it in like a slightly different accent? Actually, no, probably. Just give it.
I don't think you want me to do that.
Okay, go.
I don't know Carrie Russell's character's name. Is it okay if I just call her Carrie?
You should call her Carrie Russell.
Okay.
Her first and last name.
Carrie Russell. Oh, I am speaking in an accent.
You can't help it.
I can't, yeah. Carrie Russell has just begun teaching at a school in rural Pennsylvania. Everything seems fine, except for one of her students. He smells bad. Oh. He's taunted by all the kids. She tries to help him, but but he rejects her. Until one day, she goes to his house. And I'll leave it at that.
Well done.
Sorry, you put me on the spot, so I wasn't really ready.
Good. Like the smelling was a
yeah. I remember that from the short story. I don't know if that'll.
Okay, cool.
An element in this story. But
honestly, that was like just as effective as the trailer.
In the short story, Kerry Russell's character is the main character, and it's told from her perspective. And this student is, you know, a troubled kid that's in one of her classes.
But he
and
has a smell.
She's trying, yeah.
That's cool.
She feels really bad for him. And so, you know, she's trying to help him.
That's cool.
And she kind of, that's how she gets caught up in this horrific
tale.
Tale.
Wow, okay. Yeah. What a spooky little story.
Indeed.
Well, I liked our little back and forth. It was great.
I think so too. You know, there's a lot of trailers that came out. Sorry to anyone who was hoping to hear us talk about a trailer that we didn't cover. Do you have any honorable mentions? I got to be honest. I'm a little surprised that you didn't bring up Bad Boys for Life.
Wow, I feel like we had a whole episode about it. We never talked about Bad Boys for
Life. We never talked about Bad Boys for Life.
You know,
the trailer has finally premiered.
Yeah, I got to be...
And
it's fine.
You're not that excited about it.
Well, because it's fine. I love Bad Boys. I love Bad Boys 2. They're just going to give me what I want. And it didn't really feel... I'm afraid it's going to be stale. I think I'm just fearful.
Seeing Martin Lawrence and Will Smith, 15 years older, doing the same jokes.
The same jokes, same style, like... I don't know. A part of me wanted it to like be completely different in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to see it and I'm going to love it. What about you?
I thought one movie worth mentioning that had like a very kind of annoying art house trailer for it was Waves.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning just because it is a movie that I want to see. And the critical praise for the trailer is very, you know, over the moon. But you know, the trailer has, I feel like one trademark of an indie trailer is to have someone either like running or riding a bike and screaming up into the air.
Yep.
And this trailer has that, where like the music really starts soaring when like a girl's riding her bike down the street and she just like looks up into the sky and just screams. I was like, yep, that's what indie trailers do, because they don't have an explosion or a gunshot to pivot on that moment.
Nope, you just got to get that Oscar nom.
Yep, got to act the hell out of this scene. But that said, I do, I was kind of annoyed by the trailer, but I do think the movie itself does look good.
I think so too. Jim, this is great.
It's great. It's nice to get back into the...
Podcast swing
and of things.
Hey, peeps, hit us up. You know the places. At Trailer Made Pod.
All at gmail.com.
The Gmail, the Insta, the Twit. And until you do that, just stay tuned for our next episode.
Thank you for listening.
Coming soon.
Trailer Made.